Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Time for another episode of the Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky, and here we are in the same time zone again.
What?
This is very exciting. You know, I actually on my phone, I do have a rap horn.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It also makes a sad trombone if you want that.
Same app?
Yep. Yeah.
Wow, that's a great app. I would like to know about that app so I can download it later today. But also, I think of that more as a reggae horn, even though it has been.
Yeah, it's the reggaeton horn. It says rap horn on the actual name of the device. It says rap air horn, but it's really a reggaeton horn. Yeah.
Cool. All right, I'm glad we're on the same page. That's pretty sick. Do you control the number of pa-pa-pa-pas yourself?
Yeah, that's all just pressing with the finger and, you know, yeah.
Solid.
It's pretty good to interject into conversation.
I bet it is.
Yeah. All right, I'll stop now.
I mean, feel free to bring it back later.
you might hear it later. So you are in Wisconsin today, no?
Yep, great. Wisconsin.
Gray, cold Wisconsin.
Not too cold, thank God. It's like it's been in the 40s most of the time so far, and it's some 50s on tap later this week. So.
Yeah, we're in that lovely time of year here where it's just cold, like by normal human being standards, and not cold by Midwest standards, which are kill you cold. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I'm much more comfortable visiting in this weather.
Yeah. And pretty soon it'll be the 3 good months where coming here is awesome.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Thanks. We're all very excited for those 3 good months. We got a lot of ground to cover today and a lot of homework to give out. So, I guess we should jump into some television. Should we start with Wild Wild Country?
Sure. I am fascinated. I'm enwrapped by this. I've succeeded as well as I have in a very long time at learning as little as possible about what I was about to watch, both the actual incident the real life situation that the documentary covers and about the documentary itself and how it approaches. So I have no idea what's going on. And 2.5 episodes in, I am fascinated. I can't believe I've never heard of this group or incident before, or if I have, that I haven't been able to like tie it to whatever it is that I heard. Because this was my lifetime. I was very, very young, but this was within my lifetime. And
yeah, like I couldn't believe that I had no idea anything about this group. You know, that apparently was like a major national news story,
right?
At various points, and you see them
every
on Donahue,
major news anchor,
and like,
yeah,
you know, I mean, Donahue gives you a good sense of the time frame of when this was a thing,
right?
But like Oprah's talking about them, you know what I mean?
I know, yeah, it was clearly a huge, huge national, international story, and man, just have never heard of it, and I gotta say, at the point I'm at, there's still a lot of sort of hints at an ominous future. Right now this is a religious group with a bunch of guns, which isn't the best thing in the world. But what is striking to this point is how I'm not sure. I just keep thinking how differently this might have gone today.
Yeah, I think that thought does sort of pop into your head. I think that, too, that it's a the selection of this as a subject matter is like it's brilliant in a lot of ways, because it's a really interesting story that obviously we've all seemed to have forgotten as a culture. And it's sort of like it tells you, you know, you sort of have this one idea about who these people are and who the townspeople are. And the story doesn't really, I feel like, necessarily hold to those ideas.
Well, I'll say this. Certainly through 2.5 episodes, the story has not taken sides in a way that brings clarity to the moral controversy. Right?
Yeah.
The story, they have done a phenomenal job through 2.5 episodes of presenting it in this way where I'm like, I have mixed feelings on both sides, because part of me wants to write off these townspeople as you know, ignorant hicks. But then part of me completely understands their perspective. And then I look at the Rajneeshi and part of me is like, these are just people who want religious freedom and who are engaged in, while pretty out there, relatively harmless and voluntary behaviors. And then on the other hand, I'm like, man, there's some weird stuff here that makes me question whether what I just said is true.
Well, yeah. So, and look, I'll open up a little bit personally here. like I there are a lot of things that the, you know, when they, you know, sort of introducing you to the Rajneesh as people, like there's a lot of stuff that they're into that I have had experience with at various points in my life. Meditation and, you know, some of their attitudes and ideas around sex. And so, like, I'm sort of coming into this thinking, like, you know, oh, this is a misunderstood religion
that
plopped itself down in Oregon. And there are a bunch of, you know, ignorant hicks who assume the worst about them and that they're, you know, going to persecute them for being different. And it's going to be one of those classic American stories. I sort of feel like the specter of watching the Waco miniseries, I think, hovers above this for us. You know what I mean?
I agree.
It's going to be people who are a little bit different, but actually kind of harmless and really trying to do good, you know, against society. That's sort of the way you think it is. And then, like, you know, like you said, by the middle of the second episode, when they have their own police force and they are carrying guns, and you start to go, well, okay, well, they're clearly their idea of what a perfect society is has been perverted.
Right. Well, but then on the other side, it's like, you know, they were bombed when they had done nothing except be peaceful. And so you're going back and you're thinking, well, okay, but maybe they do really feel a need to protect themselves and maybe that's reasonable. But then, you know, and then there'll be a nugget like there were scraps of documents that were supposed to be shredded that were found that say things about censoring outgoing mail from the community. And it's like, well, that sounds super creepy. And it's doing an incredible job of playing both sides against each other and sort of back into the middle. And it's both incredibly engaging like I said, I'm completely wrapped with this series. And also does an incredible job of making your feelings change almost constantly throughout it.
Let me just say, by the way, because I'm a little further along than you are, the creepy continues to get dialed up.
That's clear.
And by the way, on both sides, like,
yeah,
no one comes out of this in my mind. You know, by through episode 4, and there's still more to go, and no one is coming out of this looking great at this point.
Well, and here's the other side of it is, they got all the principals talking. And, like I said, there's this specter of future disaster to where I don't know what the legal status of all these people is going to end up being. Like, you kind of get the feeling that some of them are in non-extradition countries for very particular reasons. Yeah. And, like, but just in terms of watching the people themselves, like, the fact that virtually everyone – except the Bhagwan himself, every intimate, you know, these are the top people from the organization and the main townspeople that were involved in legal cases and on television shows. And
that's part of what I mean, too, about the subject matter, too, I think, because maybe they haven't shown this part, but there's a point in which the Rajneesh are kind of in their attempt to sort of take over the town. They start videotaping the townspeople.
Yes, just videotaping them randomly. Yeah.
So you can tell they had a ton of cameras and they had a right. ton of footage that just happens to make great sort of grist for this documentary, where you're really seeing a lot of these people as they were. There are some drawings and a couple of like sort of animated reenactments, but for the most part, like, you really it's get to real see footage. All of the stories of the stuff that's happening.
And hear the actual people be like, well, here's what I was thinking. Here's how that happened. Here's the behind the scenes look. It's
And I don't know the answer to this, but I'm assuming that the Bhagwan is dead.
Yes, based I'm assuming that.
Based
just
on his
based,
age and
Regardless of whether something untoward happened, just by pure age, you'd imagine he would not be alive now. Right. I mean, this is 35 years ago. But I got to say, I'm so impressed. And I don't know exactly what the Duplass brother involvement in this is. But just some of the things about it, some of the ways it's shot, some of the ways music is used to sort of play against what the natural emotion of a scene might be, if that makes sense. There's a lot of it that smacks of that sort of Duplass style that I've liked. I mean, I've always liked, but I've liked in sometimes more than others. You know, I was not as big a fan of, say, Room 104.
Right.
Versus something like Safety Not Guaranteed. But there is this kind of, like, I don't know how to describe it, fly-by-night feel of what the Duplasses do that is it's here, and it works so well in this format. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, I didn't know – I mean, I didn't totally know their involvement other than I saw – I followed Mark on Twitter, and he was talking about it. And so I didn't – and I didn't necessarily know how their style would – translate to a documentary form, and like, and I don't want to give them the credit for the way this necessarily looks and feels, but you can definitely, I agree, you can feel their influence in the show, and it is fascinating. And I have this sort of hope, at least, that it catches on in like a Making a Murderer kind of way.
Yeah, I gotta say, it feels just like documentary for anyone, right? Yeah. Like this, like some documentaries, you're like, even great documentaries are like, okay, that was great, but that is for either, you know, big fans of this thing or big fans of nonfiction. You know, like, it's documentaries often just by nature are particular, and this really feels like an incredibly engaging story that anyone could get into.
Yeah. So I just, like, I want people to finish it and be able to talk about it with me and just, yes, and just work through it a
agree.
Little bit. You
get
know.
To work, people.
Yeah, so watch some Wild Wild Country. And I'm so glad that you were enjoying it as well. If I didn't, you know, if I wasn't way behind you on Sneaky Pete, I probably would have powered through the whole thing this week.
Yeah.
It's engrossing. So it was one of those things where I was like, okay, I need to turn this off because I have other stuff to watch. But yeah, I was real into it, so.
Yeah, I mean, and they are long and they are a bit intense, so you might want to mix a Sneaky Pete in here and there as a palate cleanser. But I got to say, it is just from a perspective of, especially when you consider documentaries about a thing I knew nothing about, it's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, and look, I think we'll talk a little bit more about Sneaky Pete as we get down the line. I'm six episodes in, but I'm having a lot of fun. I will say that.
It's peak Ribisi, man. It's everything I've ever wanted for Giovanni Ribisi. He's in his element. He's killing it. And one of my favorite actresses is a big part of this season, which makes it even more enjoyable for me. And I never remember her name, which makes it a hard sell that she actually is one of my favorite actresses. But
I have a feeling I know who you're talking about.
You definitely know who I'm talking about. Jane Addams is her name.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
She is, and this is a different kind of role for her. It's a more, she always plays someone who's like a little weird or neurotic or something.
Mm-hmm.
And this character has elements of that. Like she's weird. She's a friggin' psychic, or so she says. But she's like more bold and self-assured than her normal characters, and I just think it's a great turn for her.
Yeah, she's enjoyable, and I do think it's a Graham Yost sort of staple, and I think you could agree with me now that you've seen, you know, Justified of,
yeah,
like populating this world with tons of really great character actors,
right?
And because they're all mostly character actors, you tend to sort of underestimate them. when they first appear on screen, and it really sort of deepens whatever con is going on, because it's just one of those shows, you know, where sort of everyone's running a con on everyone else. And so, you know, when those cons are kind of revealed or whatever, like, there's these just so many of these like sort of great light bulb moments, you know, and there's just, I don't know, there's a lot of fun at Sneaky Pete, and I think it's one of those shows that if the barrier to entry is pretty low. So if you watch it, I get a feeling that you'll at the very least find it fun popcorn entertainment.
Yeah, and I did finish it already, so we'll circle back when you're done and do a little wrap on it.
All right. New season of Silicon Valley kicked off Sunday night.
Yeah.
Your first post-TJ Miller episodes of Silicon Valley.
Uh-huh.
I don't think when we look back on this show in, you know, even in 5 years, that we'll be thinking about, you know, pre-TJ Miller leaving and post-TJ Miller leaving, right?
No, I completely agree with that. Unfortunately, I think TJ Miller leaving, not to his credit, but I do wonder if we'll look back at TJ Miller leaving or being gone and say that, unfortunately for the show, it came at just the right time for his career and for someone not totally understanding why they want to be on the show anymore. Not that it's bad, because I enjoyed this episode like I enjoyed most episodes of the show. It just is not different at all. And no. I wonder if they're running out of runway.
Well, you know,
like, what is, it's the same thing. No, certainly every season, maybe not every episode, but close to it, where it's like, the greatest thing has happened. Oh God. Oh no. Oh, here we go. They screwed it up.
Yeah, they have the Entourage problem, right? Where it's like the only modes for Entourage a couple seasons in are careers in trouble, careers on the rebound, right? Like, those are, that's it.
Right. Companies in trouble, companies on the rebound. And it's just, I laughed at this episode. I enjoy the characters. I had fun, but I wonder if this yo-yo is going to break pretty soon.
Right. Like, at some point, there has to be this some sort of changing arc for Pied Piper. Like, they can't stay lovable underdogs battling corporate behemoth forever and it just sort of be varying degrees of success in that war, or it's not going to be that interesting a show. You know,
right?
It'll be a funny show, but I don't know how I don't know how interesting it's going to be from a narrative standpoint. So, like, I do feel like Mike Judge is brilliant and perfectly capable of writing his way out of that. But if they don't do something about that, the show is going to reach the kind of stasis that Entourage did. I would say Californication too.
That was exactly what I was going to say. That's so funny. Californication was exactly what came to mind as you were going through that. That, like, I love that show. And frankly, I didn't love it a lot less in season 5 than I did in season 1. It was still hilarious. I still love Duchovny. I still thought the character was well drawn. But it was, like, I was forced to acknowledge when people were like, that show is not good, that, like, well, no one's really progressed. And nothing much has changed in 5 years.
Yeah, no. Only the daughter. Only the daughter. Right. The daughter got horny by the end.
Right.
But that was pretty much it.
But it's like, I could still watch it and laugh most weeks. But I was forced to admit that, like, there's not a lot here.
Right. And that was okay. It's like, if that's where it caps out,
and that may be where Silicon Valley's headed, and that may just be the sort of show it is. But I do think we're at sort of an inflection point where either you're more than this or you're this for another couple seasons and goodbye.
Right. And with Mike Judge, you know, my expectation definitely tilts more towards more, you know, like I really feel like he's made some transcendent entertainment product, some generational entertainment product over the last 30 years, whether it's, you know, Office Space or Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah. Except the one thing I would say is that, his two TV shows are before Silicon Valley were cartoons, which by the very nature of cartoons, particularly Beavis and Butthead and King of the Hill, nobody changes and nothing progresses. And it's sort of,
that's fair. By the way,
like Office Space, Idiocracy are thoughtful, you know, kind of brilliant movies in their way, that have specific pointed edges, but his shows have been cartoons.
Yeah. I feel like Idiocracy, by the way, is super, super deserving of a rewatch. And you know what I mean? Like, well, I don't know when the last time you saw Idiocracy was, and for me, it's been a while.
No, it's disturbing now.
I mean, other than the fact that we all live in it currently, but like...
Yeah. No, it's because like Idiocracy now is like watching friggin' Blade Runner or something. It's like a little too intense and like accurate of a potential future.
Yeah, it's like, man, he called it.
Yeah, I never saw Extract.
I did see Extract. It's not great. It's fine. It's not great. But I do think I don't know. Like the other thing is that doesn't it seem like with the way that current events are and the place that technology kind of has in the culture.
You could say something with Silicon Valley.
Like that there is room for the kind of sharp insight that he's sort of been known to provide, and that this show is not really taking a ton of that other than just sort of like, you know, there'll be a swipe here at the general like bro-ness.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the whole you know, Hooley and Gavin Belson's entire character, pretty much everything involving him is just the send-up of our current technological culture. But, yeah, it's not pointed in any way.
Right. And, like, there's nothing about, like, well, what are we doing with people's data or what are we doing? You know what I mean? Like, some of these things that are kind of affecting us. Other than, I guess there was a little joke in the credits about the Facebook being in Russian or something now. And I missed that totally. I just read about it.
There were a couple good Facebook jokes. I mean, they get jokes in, but again, that's a cartoon. So the question is this show more than a cartoon? And I would say to this point, it has not been.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like when your big moment is like, oh, you know, I can't believe I'm blanking on the main character's name.
Richard.
Richard, yeah. Oh, Richard Andrews. He's got to give a speech in front of the staff, and he pukes. And it's like, oh, Richard is awkward and is not quite equipped to handle the CEO. Right. Like that is
there's
literally
a whole
the
bit.
Joke
there's
of
a
every
running
show.
Bit through the episode about how loud his gulping is. You know,
yeah.
Like, and it's like that's funny, and it's funny the whole time. It's not a bad joke. It's a good joke, but it's just like a new version of another joke we've had almost every episode.
Yes, yeah. We've definitely ground into that territory. So
yeah.
I enjoy the show. You know, when it comes on Sunday night, I'm going to watch it.
Right.
Sunday night got really trafficky all of a sudden this week, by
yeah,
the
you
way.
Like throw it in between John Oliver and the next show we're going to talk about, both of which are a little heavier and better, I think. And
yeah,
it's a nice change of pace.
But I don't know. Like, I would like this show to have more to say.
That'd be great. But I'm not. I think you might be barking up the wrong tree. I guess we're gonna find out this season, is what I would say.
I agree. Because we're at the point it's gonna be high grade ballers in a minute. You know what I mean?
That's right. That's right. It's tech ballers. Yeah.
Tech ballers. It could have been a name for the show. Tech ballers.
Totally.
And also, let's give Kumail more to do. Right.
I agree.
Yeah.
You know, I had the weirdest conversation with a small group of women the other night.
Who think he's super handsome, right?
No.
No. Okay.
No,
not for chicks are kind
of
into him.
Agreed that he was like underwhelming as a leading man in the Big Sick, and I like didn't know what had happened or how to have a conversation with them anymore.
Wow. I have not. That is the first I've heard of that talk.
I know, and it was a unanimous opinion in the room. It was very bizarre.
Yeah, I know you're right. I don't know what to do with that one.
I was like, but they were like, I just wanted more Holly Hunter. And I was like, well, everyone wants more Holly Hunter, but that's not Kumail's fault.
Is it just that we as dudes root for Kumail because he's not conventionally handsome?
I wonder. That's what it made me think about. That like Kumail is the everyman in a way that like no film actor has ever been the everyman before. I don't know.
Yeah. This reminds me of something, and I'm sorry I'm now taking the podcast on a tangent here, but this is no shade at all on Beyonce, who is one of our finest
artists. I don't like how this is starting.
Like, is it possible to think like Beyonce is really good and a legend and all that, but also sort of feel like maybe we're paying a little bit too much attention to the every single detail in her life? And this whole like Twitter thing about like Someone told a story about how somebody bit Beyonce at a party, and now the internet sleuthers are out there trying to find out who it was that bit Queen Bee. Like, do we have to obsess about little Beyonce thing? Can we just be good?
Hold on. Wait. Bit?
Yeah, somebody supposedly bit Beyonce at a party.
Where?
Like on the face, I believe.
What?
Yeah. That's a thing.
Like, supposedly. Recently?
Yeah, I guess it was recent. I mean, the story came out recently. I think the party was a little bit before that. I believe Tiffany Haddish told the story. I think is where it originated.
Well, was it Tiffany Haddish who bit her?
No. She was not the person who bit her.
Well, bit her? Like, what? How do you? I have so many questions.
See, this is what happens. Yeah, it is a Tiffany Haddish story. And here, if you search Beyonce bit, I just put Beyonce bit. Speculation about who bit Beyonce is running wild. Who bit Beyonce in the face? New details about what Tiffany Haddish saw. MSN, who bit Beyonce? Like, it's... Washington Post, who bit Beyonce? A guide to the most bizarre celebrity mystery of 2018. This is from the GQ profile, apparently.
I'm sorry, I got an autoplay as I'm trying to understand what's happening here.
Oh, yeah, I'm probably going to get one too here in a second.
Are Beyonce fans mad at her?
They're not mad. I guess they're just trying to find out who it is.
I am... There was this actress there doing the most. Oh, my God.
I love that you're discovering all this in real time. All right, so maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we all should obsess about Beyonce getting bit in the face.
No, I don't think that's about Beyonce. Beyonce's friend walked up and was like, "Can you believe this bitch just bit Beyonce?" I have to know who bit Beyonce.
All right, I take it back. If the internet finds out, I'll be sure to pass it on.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Can I just read the quotes from Tiffany Haddish?
Go ahead.
Beyonce's at the bar, so I said to Beyonce, "Did she really bite you?" She was like, "Yeah." I was like, "She gonna get her ass beat tonight." She was like, "Tiffany, no. Don't do that. That bitch is on drugs. She's not even drunk. The bitch is on drugs. She's not like that at all the time. Just chill." So, if I am to understand, Beyonce got bit in the face by some crazy actress on drugs who is, I guess, her friend? Because Beyonce invited her to a party.
Yeah, they're all at a party together.
And then she got wasted on drugs and bit Beyonce in the face, and Beyonce was like, "No, it's cool. Sometimes she gets all wasted and bites people in the face." I have to know who this is. I don't think that's about Beyonce.
Chrissy Teigen says she knows.
Oh, of course she does. Chrissy Teigen knows everything. So Chrissy Teigen knows where the bodies are buried. Don't kid yourself. Do not kid yourself.
Sanaa Lathan says it's not her.
But if I can spin it, I would say if it was, I don't know, if it was Jay-Z getting bit in the face, I would be just as interested. If it was Tiffany Haddish getting bit in the face, I'd be just as interested.
All right, that's fair. See, so you don't think this is just a everything that happens to Beyonce we have to talk about endlessly thing. You're in.
I think this is anytime a famous person gets bit in the face by another person who might be famous, we have to know exactly what the hell happened here.
I mean, I guess, like, if this was...
If you heard Nicole Kidman was at a party and got bit in the face, you wouldn't want to know what happened?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, if Anne Hathaway got bit in the face, I don't think I would care. I
have to know.
I don't think I would care. I really don't.
Oh, I would care. if Tiffany Haddish was like, "I was at this party, Anne Hathaway got bit right in the face," I would be like, "What?" Also, this may be anywhere Tiffany Haddish was, I have to know everything about it, is also a thing.
So how C-list would the singer have to be for you to, like, there is certain, it's, the fame does contribute to this. If I was like, "Oh, Jordan Sparks got bit in the face at a party," you wouldn't care, right?
Nah, I mean, I care less. You're right. Fame is a factor, but honestly, face biting is.
But you're just in on face biting.
Like, I guess the question is, how unfamous would the actress who bit her have to be for this to be just a story about a psycho at a bar and not something I'm desperate to know details about? And I think the answer is Kathy Griffin.
I feel like the story would be excellent if it happened to Kathy Griffin, though, right? Because you would.
Well, yeah. I think honestly, it's as much about the mystery of the face biter as it is about the famousness of the bitee.
What if it was like Andy Dick, someone like where you wouldn't even really be that surprised if there was face biting involved?
Yeah. Right. Well, that's the thing. Is like if it turns out it's I don't know who. See, this is the thing. I'm pretty sure whoever this actor, I don't know who would be at a Beyonce party that Beyonce would defend, who I would not be shocked to find out was doing face biting.
And apparently, like, doing drugs regularly enough that Beyonce was like, oh, she's just in her drug mode. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, she does a couple lines, she bites a face. It's more of like a once every 3 months thing than an everyday thing.
Oh, man. I got to tell you, this was not in the show rundown.
No. Well, I didn't even know about it. If I'd known about it, it would have been the first thing we discussed.
All right. So back to Sunday Night Television.
I feel like we need a guest from, I feel like we need like Juliette Littman
to break this down.
We need somebody. We need some sort of like celeb expert.
I don't think you could be able to bet in Vegas, like if this is a thing that you could bet on, or whether or not that Juliette Littman is going to do a full pot of this. Like there, that is of course happening.
Oh, well, yeah, no, sources say, or no, I guess that's the NBA one. It would be
the one with, like, Amanda Dobbins. Yeah, jam session. Like,
yeah, no, I subscribe.
There might be a jam session emergency pod about this.
You know what? I'm going to check and see if there is one already. Maybe we can get to the bottom of this just by me listening to my girlfriends, Juliette Littman and Amanda Dobbins.
I don't listen to that one, so you have to let me know how it turns out.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I have to say, like,
I'm on the Bachelor Party beat. You can be on jam session.
That's fair. Yeah. I think that's a reasonable separation of duties that forces both of us to confront
sad realities
about
our lives.
Just who it is that we are. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the sad reality of Barry's life. How about that? Barry Berkman?
Or is it Barry Block?
Barry's new Sunday night show, HBO, starring Bill Hader. And I guess conceived really by Bill Hader. This is kind of his sort of auteurist baby almost. Really great first episode, I thought. Like, really interesting pilot.
Great. Me and the lady watched it last night and afterwards looked at each other and were like, that was great. It's just, especially for a pilot, I thought it was really feeling and the Barry character is weird. And a sort of a thing I'm not sure we have totally seen on a TV show that seems to be relatively serious. I mean, funny. It's definitely a comedy, but like sincere, I guess, is more than serious is what I mean.
Yeah.
And I just thought Hader was fantastic.
Hader was fantastic. I really enjoyed Henry Winkler.
Well, Henry Winkler. And I was having this conversation with someone the other day, based in part on listening to podcasts about Barry, the Hader podcast specifically with Bill Simmons about Barry. And the fact that Henry Winkler was literally the coolest man in the world for like a 5-year period.
It is sort of wild.
Is so incredible. And it gives me such faith in like the possibilities of my own life. That, like, this vaguely dumpy Jew was the dude in the world.
They didn't know this at the time when they were having this discussion, but there's a radio station in Milwaukee that just changed their name to Fonzie 103. I think it's 103. It's Fonzie whatever number it is.
Sure.
And, you know, like, that can still happen in 2018. And it's an oldie station, granted, but, like, it's... The idea that, like, that name still carries that cool connotation. Like, that is what an indelible character you created.
I mean,
50 years later.
It's crazy. I've probably seen less than 10 episodes of Happy Days in my life. And the Fonz is the meaning is, it's something I've been aware of for as long as I can remember.
Yeah, Yeah, it's pretty
good. That is unbelievable. And then the fact that he didn't get typecast is unbelievable. And the fact that he has aged gracefully into playing these sort of bizarre, goofy old man roles. And this one seems to have a little extra sort of asshole edge to it that I really enjoy. Like, I don't know. I'm very excited about this show.
Yeah. You know, the other person I really want to give a shout out to is Steven Root.
Always good.
Consistently excellent. We, you know, we mentioned Office Space in passing today. Like, you know, from that,
it's hard to believe.
News Radio to a million other things since then. Like, he's always good.
It's hard to reconcile his Office Space, Milton in Office Space, with a lot of the other things he's done.
Yeah, it is, actually.
like you look at this character who's like a hardened, you know, ex-military criminal, basically. Reconciling that with, like, essentially mentally disabled Milton in Office Space is unbelievable. And then, you know, you look through his TV and movie credits, and he is the definition of a working actor.
Yeah. Even his IMDb, like his IMDb bio says he's one of the most prolific actors in Hollywood.
So, yeah.
When IMDb says that.
You're talking about a guy whose first, you know, major work was in the late 80s. He is in something almost every year from then till now. And most years, half a dozen to a dozen things. Yeah. And to the point where, in 2017 and 18, he's in 5 movies and 5 TV shows. Like, holy Moses.
Yeah. I kind of wonder, like, what sort of check does it take to hire Steven Root? You know what I mean?
Right? Like for his one episode of Veep, what does he cash?
Yeah.
That's a fantastic question.
I would really love to know the answer to that.
Yeah, he's one of those dudes that if you watch stuff, you've seen Steven Root 1,000 times, and it looks like he gets a little more to work with here, which is fun.
Yeah, and like sometimes you definitely recognize him right away, but not always, which I think is kind of neat. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. He's done a lot of Coen Brothers stuff, too, over the years.
Yeah. So, I think there's a lot of potential for this show.
A ton. And talking, you know, especially after the conversation we just had about Silicon Valley – this is a show that from the very beginning, although it is a comedy, it's a dark comedy, and you can tell it's going to get right into all of this stuff.
Yeah, and you feel like the Barry's growth movement is sort of tied to the whole thesis of the thing, right? Like,
yes.
This is not going to be a character where you look 5 seasons from now, you're like, wow, these people are all exactly the same. Like, that just doesn't really seem like a legitimate possibility for the show, so...
Exactly. And just that moment, a slight spoiler here, but that moment in the pilot where he realizes his mark has been taken out and then kills like 5 people in 7 seconds is like you get this all of a sudden you're like, oh, man, like this is a really violent man, you know?
Yeah.
You can tell that they are diving into the depth from the beginning, and that's kind of exciting.
Yeah. No, I agree. That's a whole nother sort of, like, area for the show to explore that sort of makes you feel excited about the possibility of where this is going to be. It's possible, you know, that this is just a really great pilot and the show goes nowhere, but great pilot.
Yeah, it was a really great pilot, and it opens the door to what feels like a ton of interesting possibilities.
Yeah, I agree. So Barry is a recommend. We got a lot of recommends this week.
Yeah.
You want to talk about Atlanta?
Yeah, I mean, we've already recommended this a ton. I think it's a great, you know, I think it's about as good and as nice a thing I can say. I don't know quite how to put it. It's about as good a compliment as I can give to the show that the most recent episode was one of my, I don't even want to say least favorites because it was great, but I almost wish we'd had this conversation after episode 3 because of how incredible episode 3 was. But even episode 4, which is of the second season, which is not my favorite, is brilliant in so many ways. It takes us into this bizarre world, as this show so often does. It sets up so many thoughtful bits of commentary about the human behavior and race dynamics, and it leaves the characters in a place you're not necessarily expecting to go.
Yeah.
You know? And that I think that may be the thing I liked the least about it, was like, I didn't want the characters to go where they ended up. But, you know, when I take a step back and think about it, that's like my personal feeling about plot. That's not about whether it's a good show or a good episode of television. It's just the level the show executes at, the thoughtfulness of every shot. It feels like one of those things. Tarantino movies are like this for me, where it feels like at any moment, in any single shot, I could look at any small portion of the screen and get something crazy going on that I might not even have noticed, but that is completely planned and perfectly executed and fits like delicately into the structure of the show.
Yeah, I really liked the show's ability to throw all of these wildly convergent tones together, sometimes in the same scene, and just sort of nail them all. And I think, yeah, like I think this episode is not going to go down as necessarily one of people's favorite episodes over the course of this season or the show. But I mostly think that is because it's a tough hang, and it's a tough hang because it's dealing with some stuff that's sort of really real and not particularly pleasant, not because it's not brilliantly executed.
It's a tough hang because you're watching this very real depiction of the dissolution of a relationship in a way of like, it's an episode about a thing that I think everyone goes through, whether it's in a romantic relationship or not, of having the experience of someone that you were so close to, that you identified with and spent time with, that means something important to you, and that you realize you are just not like them.
Yeah.
You realize that, like, this is just not functional. This is not going to work. Whether it's we aren't friends anymore. You know, like, you can have that experience as with a childhood friend at age 30 being like, you know what? This is not a relationship I can have anymore. We're not in the same place. We're not in a place to be, even if it's just friends, you know? And I think everyone who's had a relationship fall apart has felt some aspect of that where, like, no, this just, however strong we may have felt at one point, however strong we may feel now, this isn't right.
Yeah. Anytime you have a conversation in which one person in a relationship says, this present arrangement is currently functioning and works for me, and the other person is like, this absolutely doesn't work for me, and then you have to see where someone is willing or not willing to move.
Right. Like, is there a middle ground or is there not?
Who hasn't been sort of in that circumstance, and to deal with it in a real way? Like, that's not a conversation we see on television all that often, even though it really happens, I think, pretty much to all of us in real life. And then to take moments like that that are very real and true, and then effortlessly mix them with crazy surreal shit.
Like the girl coming up to him who's like, what an incredible oh God. Oh yeah. No.
Oh no. Or like the weird dude that appeared like watching the ping pong game all of a sudden.
Oh my God. He's been standing behind me the whole time. Yes, and stuff like that that's so off the wall that I think for both of us, you know, when he described this as Twin Peaks with rappers, I didn't believe him. And second of all, I kind of hoped it wasn't true.
Well, you know how I feel about Twin Peaks. So I'm still not buying into that conversation.
Well, that's my point. But I do think I now know exactly what he meant. And that dude, that creepy dude standing there that's never wrapped up in any meaningful way, that doesn't – that is just – but somehow it works here.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain it, and I almost feel bad for being as ruthless with the Twin Peaks people who said the same sorts of things. I mean, not really, because that show's garbage, but I sort of almost feel like, while I have no interest to go back and watch any Twin Peaks, I almost feel like apologizing and being like, even though I don't want to watch that trash, I get what you were saying.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, look, not to get too far into Twin Peaks, because neither one of us likes the show, and we don't really spend a lot of time with it, but like, Twin Peaks feels like things are thrown together sort of at the wall, and they're all sort of random, and some of them work out, and some of them don't. And like you said, I feel like this show seems so much more considered, so that when you have a moment, like Zazie Beetz talking in German to the German bartender guy, and they have this right. conversation about relationships in which she feels totally seen, as that's happening, you feel like this is just a weird random thing. Like, oh, they're talking in German, and it's weird, and they're really vibing in front of him, and he's sort of being left out. That's sort of all it is. But then you realize, as the episode goes, like, no, that's actually also meant as a contrast to where they are in their relationship and sort of
right.
how that's breaking down. And you realize, like, oh, no, okay, so, yeah, it's a moment that feels random when it's happening, but it wasn't random at all. And to me, that's a much more interesting form of storytelling than what David Lynch does, which I would think you could describe as barely storytelling.
No, you're right. I mean, there's no reason to continue dissing Twin Peaks, but obviously I agree with everything you just said. I'm not sure you would you'd be as successful in defending the depth of purpose with regards to the creepy man standing behind her while they play ping pong. I think that's just funny.
You're right. That was just funny.
but it was really funny.
Yeah.
It was really funny. And having a knack, there's something special about having a knack for knowing, maybe without even knowing why, but for knowing that that creepy guy is going to be hilarious and not just weird.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
and I think that is probably where this show succeeds the most, and why it feels like it always has such purpose. And I think it's earned that by doing it so often in the past. You know, the one that always jumps back to my mind is the invisible car from season one. Like, that they pay off the invisible car bit like an episode later with a rapper driving away in an invisible car and hitting someone is the most brilliant, and you could easily miss the invisible car entirely.
Yeah.
It's like just a dude drives away in the background.
Yep. Like, if there's a hilarious Florida man joke later in the season, would that surprise you at all?
No, not at all.
Nope.
Not at all. And even within the one episode, the way they pulled off the Florida man callback was hilarious. Yeah. Like, that's the sort of stuff that is really, in my mind, that's television genius in a way.
Yeah. So
I think we see every day with every show, even all the good shows we talk about and watch, how hard it is to be as precise and consistently effective as Atlanta is.
Yeah. It's really tough. It's probably why they don't make that many, be my guess.
It might be. It might. I mean, yeah, because, 300 minutes a year might be about all you can do.
Yeah, I agree. So it's the British model.
And frankly, a lot of those British shows maintain a high level for longer or over more seasons than American shows.
I would agree. All right. We actually have a little time for once before we get to homework. Is there anything you want to discuss in the sports arena before we jump in?
Well, could I get a reggaeton horn for Illinois, Loyola Chicago, please?
Oh, yeah. Hold on. Sorry. I was not ready with my reggaeton horn.
Okay. That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I guess it takes a second. I should have prepared you in advance.
I really thought I was going to do a sad trombone callback later, so I kind of had that set together.
Oh, yeah. Well, good for Loyola Chicago. I mean, the basketball is terrible. Not them. I'm not picking them out.
I wish I could have bet, that you would say the basketball is terrible within 30 seconds of an NCAA tournament discussion.
Watched it. It's not like I understand your point. I'm maybe a broken record, but like, it's the first thing I think and the last thing I think every time I turn it on. And I don't believe that you could be watching this and not having that feeling.
This is the difference. Like, I'm not arguing that point. Like, I'm not here to tell you the basketball is great. And so I'm certainly aware that at times it is terrible.
But look, I watched the Duke game
lots of times.
You know,
that game was terrible too, by the way. Like, it was to me, it was weird to hear like Nance and Grant Hill and whatever like get all, you know, talking about what a classic this was, and we of course we're gonna let's play 5 minutes more. It's been so great. I was like, no. The last 2 minutes were kind of okay.
But that's the whole point. That's why I feel like I have to mention it but every time we talk about college basketball.
The difference between you and me is like I'm not trying to disagree that the basketball was terrible.
Yes,
it's not the first or last thing that I think of.
But I think you're rare.
You know, like
I really do.
There's a lot of people watching and enjoying this tournament.
No. You misunderstand. I think most of those people would defend the basketball.
That's
the problem.
I mean, I think we all sort of acknowledge that there's some
no.
structural problems inherent in college basketball right now.
You and I and most NBA fans acknowledge.
And I say this as a person who started, like, I mean, you know, when we started talking about this, college basketball is my preference. Like, I just love the college game. But you have to acknowledge that the quality of play has declined massively.
Except you don't have to, because as you just pointed out, the three broadcasters didn't do that at all. So I think while obviously, you know, the broadcasters are not going to be like, this is horrifying. You know, most fans also don't acknowledge it, and they mistake close games and overtime games for good games, which is what happened with the Duke and Kansas game. And, you know, thank God Kansas won, because things are good and right in the world again. And Grayson Allen cried and I enjoyed it. But at the end of the day, I'm going to keep watching these games the same way, which is on the internet, keeping track of the score and seeing if they're close late, because I can't watch 2 hours of guys wasting 20 seconds and kicking the ball around.
Oh, yeah. See, I can watch that. If it's competitive, I can watch it. If they're, you know, when the games are 20 points, unless it's, you know, some underdog who's doing crazy stuff, I'm probably out. But as long as the games are close, I don't necessarily need them to be that well played. The level of talent on display is still enough for me.
I mean, that, you know, I will say the Loyola Chicago kids have played really solid basketball, which makes their games easier to watch.
Interesting, fundamentally sound basketball. And I'm very curious to see what they do against that Michigan defense, which, you know, may make for an uglier game, but I think it'll be an interesting game. And then I think the Kansas Villanova game has a chance to actually just be a well played game.
Yeah, I was going to say these two games I may actually watch, because I'm just rooting for the underdog, and Loyola Chicago is fun. And, you know, the other game, the 2-1 seeds that actually might be good and have a few, there's at least a few NBA players in the bunch. But, you know, I can't, the level at which I can get jazzed up over this just decreases every year, I think.
What would have to change for you? Like, I mean, obviously the NBA is considering reinventing their policy in terms of draft.
I think a baseball policy would help a lot.
I think a baseball policy would be the best thing for the college game in terms of the quality of play.
I mean.
Yeah, I agree with you. I have a feeling that's not where we're headed, though.
Well, I think a version of that, it might be 0 or 2 instead of 0 or 3.
Yeah.
You know? But I think that's the only real change that would have a positive effect on both levels, and it would have a positive effect on the NBA.
Do you think just beefing up the G League could be enough where people felt like playing in the G League was a viable alternative to playing college basketball?
School?
Yeah, right out of high school.
Yeah, I think that would be a bad idea developmentally at this point.
Yeah.
The G League is not the second best league in the world. It's probably not even top 5. So I'm not sure the G League competition is significantly better than college competition right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you hear that Quinn Cook dominated the G League for years, and then
you watch him play
with the Warriors, I go,
Good thing is about the G League.
I know he set some good games the last couple of weeks. I saw him in person a couple of weeks ago.
You saw this is the worst game of his career, but he's a guy who you can – once he – got some real playing time, you can immediately see why he dominated the G League. The fact is that having worked in the D League for a season and watched you know, a full season's worth of games. NBA guys have always stood out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, I guess.
So if you're
– He's still playing G League level defense. It may be not even G League level defense.
I would disagree with that. Again, I think you saw his worst game. I would say he's playing slightly below average NBA defense, but for a 6-foot point guard, that's not the end of the world. Mm. I'd say he's shown at the Warriors, he's 100% an NBA player. And again, the issue is not whether he's a 10-year NBA starter. He certainly isn't, but he's 100% an NBA player, and NBA players, again, have always done. I remember the
issue
guy,
is whether he can submarine you or not in the first round of a playoff series, and I think that's still yet to be determined.
I think he'll be fine. We don't even know if he'll be on the roster yet, but that's a separate issue. In terms of quality of D League play, just to give you an idea, the guy who jumped off the court that I saw in my time in the G League, there were a couple actually. One played for our team and unfortunately never had his NBA career at all because he blew out his knee right when he got signed by the Nuggets, and that was Brian Butch, who was a Wisconsin star, shooting big man.
Sorry, Brian Butch, for your sad trombone. I was really just looking to shoehorn that in there.
That was sad. but no, the other one was Sundiata Gaines. You remember Sundiata Gaines?
Yes, I do.
He was a star at Georgia, and he ended up playing 2 or 3 years with the Jazz, I think, but went through the G League first, the D League at the time, and was doing what Quinn Cook was doing, basically. And when you saw him, it was clear here was a guy who was an NBA player playing against a bunch of guys who were never going to be NBA players no matter what they did. And that is still, although the G League has improved since then, I would say that's still a pretty good description of what's happening. To the extent that teams have 2 or 3 maybe NBA players now, those guys still stand out like sore thumbs. I mean, Damian Jones, who can't get playing time for the Warriors at all during meaningful minutes, is a dominant center at the G League level. So,
is there a scenario in which you can see yourself casually watching G League games for entertainment?
No, not unless it was much better. That's my point. So whereas EuroLeague, although I don't because I got plenty of NBA to watch, like I could see casually watching some EuroLeague because that's second best league in the world, you know? And if you want to make maybe say the Spanish ACB, you know, I could see that. Like if I was in Spain, I could see being like, let's go catch a game. This is good basketball. You know, those are still a couple levels above both college and the G League. So I don't know. I think the best solution is to have a better college basketball. And I think the best way to do that is insist that people who go stay for at least 2, if not 3 years, because like we were just talking about, Loyola looks like a much better basketball team.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at Kansas isn't a great example, but I mean, it's just the fact that Syracuse, just by playing a good 2-3 zone, can break apart many of the best teams in basketball just because they're not good enough basketball teams.
Yeah. And look,
that tells you everything you have to know.
I think when you look at North Carolina, and I know this is a weird year because they got housed in whatever game that they lost, but that was just sort of, they just had one of those days. When you look at the recent success of North Carolina in this tournament, you know, and you're talking about 2 of the last 3 finals, they have done that without having the level of recruiting that the school across town
less does. One and duns.
No one and duns, really.
Wasn't Bryce Johnson?
No. I mean, he was a couple years
ago. No, he was 2.
Yeah, he left that.
Yeah, so I mean, that's the point. And even he could have used another year or 2 in college, right. I would say. So,
but they've been more veteran-laden teams, and I really think that's helped them as the tournament's gone on. And Villanova, really the same. Gonzaga.
Well, and I think that's why you saw so many 9 and 11 seeds move along this year, is because they're teams that we weren't excited about during the season because they didn't have the exciting one-and-done top 15 draft pick guys. A lot of them have a bunch of guys who have played together or who are pretty darn good. And that actually often makes for better basketball and a better team game and just better than Marvin Bagley and Wendell Carter, as good as they may be individually.
Yeah. That's why the Virginia thing's so weird, man. It was so weird that happened.
Well, they lost one of their best players right before the tournament. Yeah. And that was obviously a pretty darn good UMBC team.
It wasn't obvious. It wasn't so obvious against Kansas State the next week.
I don't know. They even hung with Kansas State for a while.
Yeah, but the Kansas State team is just thoroughly okay, I think. All right, let's jump into homework, because we got a lot of it this week, right?
Yeah, we do.
All right, so let's start with something else that's now popped up in this Sunday night thing, and I don't know how I'm going to have time to tape it all. FX has a new show, Trust, about the J.P. Getty kidnapping, which is suddenly all the rage.
Did you see All the Money in the World?
I did not. Did you?
No, me neither. Maybe we should.
Maybe. I'm definitely want to come at this with a fresh set of eyes. I did not. I haven't taped the first episode. I'm sure I can find it somewhere.
Do you want to watch it on demand like a normal?
Yeah, I got
on demand,
and I got Hulu, and I got FX Now, and whatever. I'll figure it out.
Yeah, why don't you chill, man? Why don't you just chill and watch it, for God's sakes?
Well, I got to watch Sneaky Pete on my damn iPad, because I can't figure out how to put it on my TV, and it's a giant pain. I really like
can't
to watch
you just get an
on
HDMI cord and like plug a computer into the TV?
From plug an iPad into the TV?
Don't you have a computer?
Not really. No, I'm like I'm like that little girl in the commercial.
What's a computer? You're like the girl from
Better
Things.
Yeah.
What's a computer? Well, a computer is a really remarkable device that often has an HDMI plug.
I have a desktop computer, but it's not anywhere near my TV, so I'd have to get a really long HDMI plug. Anyway,
despite your technological deficit, I think we can get this done.
I agree. And are we trying to see Annihilation? You're going
yes,
to see Annihilation.
I am seeing Annihilation in a matter of hours. I've got my tickets to sit in row E, seat 12 in a recliner, and watch some ladies do
annihilate
some space
each
stuff.
Other. Somebody's going to get annihilated.
Are they? I don't know who's getting annihilated, but I'm excited.
Wouldn't you be pretty disappointed if no one gets annihilated?
Well, but maybe maybe they're going to annihilate some aliens or a planet. I don't know.
Well, then the aliens get annihilated.
People.
All right, so Annihilation. And then where are you at with Billions? You're like one episode in, right?
Not even. I just when I landed on a red eye in Chicago Monday morning, and as I was like lying around my parents' house before I met my friends for brunch, I started some Billions. And then decided I wasn't going to remember anything and took a nap.
Okay. Well, awake from your slumber, because we're on season three now, and I need you to catch up so we can talk about this.
The plan is I'm going to try to catch up. So far in the, like, 20 minutes I've watched, a man has been peed on and also a hedge fund manager has sent a bunch of children of 9/11 heroes to college. And as far as I can tell, the guy who got peed on is the good guy, and the college guy is the bad guy, and I'm in on that. So that's where I'm at with Billions. I got some time in the next couple weeks, so I'm going to try to pound through the first two seasons and hope I can catch up to you in the middle of season three somewhere, at which point we can discuss current events, but I can keep you posted as I make progress.
All right. So we'll do Billions in the show in a few weeks. This is a good opportunity if you have not watched it at all to jump in.
Just jump in, man. The water's warm.
And then I think, because Al Pacino and Barry Levinson are making the rounds doing press, that HBO is about to debut Paterno.
Yeah.
So let's watch that.
Definitely. It's gotten surprisingly good response. In fact, I'm surprised. And I've heard them talk about this. Can you remember Al Pacino doing press?
No. Not really. It's been a while.
For nothing. Yeah. Not for anything. So that is surprising and entertaining, and it's fun to hear more from Al Pacino the human.
I'm not totally sure I'd want to watch Al Pacino do press.
Well, I don't know that I would either, but I do like that he's getting interviewed. Like, I can't recall ever seeing an Al Pacino interview before.
And I'm just definitely interested in it. We've reached a singularity where I feel like Al Pacino really does sort of look like Joe Paterno.
He does, and the nose thing they put on him helps a lot. Yeah. And I'll say this too. Let's cherish Al Pacino because, you know, he's tremendous, and who knows how many more Al Pacino roles we get.
That was a little depressing, but yeah, I'm not going to argue with that.
No, I mean, he really – I think he's someone that has been – De Niro has had this sort of second life of old guy stuff that he's gotten a lot of credit for, and that has kept him in the zeitgeist and the conversation to where, you know, he always comes up when we talk about the great actors and the great actors from that generation. But the rest of those dudes aren't working much.
Well, I don't. I'm assuming that you did not listen to the Brian Koppelman podcast with Simmons. Brian Koppelman, the creator of Billions. You should listen to it. Oh, you did listen to it.
Yeah.
He talks a lot about Pacino having the fire and still working and being out there and doing lots of stuff.
Oh, but I know. I'm saying that's great. He's one of the only guys from that generation.
Oh, okay, I thought you were just saying De Niro was like that and Pacino was not. Okay,
No, Pacino's like that in that he's active. I'm not sure the zeitgeist has appreciated it in the same way. And I think the breadth of this guy's career is truly phenomenal. He's played some of the biggest, most important roles in movie history. And I think he's actually come around to becoming somewhat underrated as an actual actor. I think the idea of like just Al Pacino yelling has become this caricature that people forget how really incredible this guy is.
Yeah. No, that is fair. You know,
guy was yeah, that's all. I think De Niro has broken out of the like, oh, he's just De Niro thing a little bit because of some funny, weird roles he's taken recently. The Meet the Fockers and you know, The Intern and stuff like this, where he's...
I really like The Intern.
Well, that's the thing. This is that The Intern is exactly the point I'm making about De Niro, that like he does he takes these turns and people are like, I didn't know he could do that. Look at De Niro. Like, what an actor. And people sort of have come back to appreciating him. And I think Al Pacino is still kind of lost in like the Screaming Al caricature, which is just kind of
He doesn't have any interest in doing that. You know what I mean? I feel like Pacino doesn't really have any interest in doing that.
Well, that may be the difference may be that Pacino cares less about his image, but it doesn't make him less deserving of a good one.
Yes. That's totally fair. All right, so we got Trust, Annihilation, Paterno, watching Billions. Americans comes back this week, and we're not going to talk about it on the show, but I would heartily encourage you to watch the final season of The Americans.
You heartily encourage people in your own time,
one
mister.
One of the great golden age television shows that escapes Kolski for whatever reason. So,
for the reason that it's not actually that great.
Okay, fine. All right, I think we can wrap up on that note. Ooh-ah.
Okay. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.